Okay, ladies, good evening. We are focusing on tonight on Shmuel Bey's Perek. This is Perek Tess. So every week, basically, just to follow through, is every week is a Perek. So it gives us 45 minutes to really try to absorb each Perek. Last week, we focused on Perek Ches and the battles of David. This week is the character of Mephibosheth. And I just want to, before even getting there, just to appreciate how real Tanakh is. Meaning to say that, you know, when you read a lot of hero literature, you know, we talk about the heroes and villains and people whose abilities are exaggerated and great leaders and powerful crooks. But sometimes in those kinds of literature, we forget about the real people. And life is full of people who aren't very powerful and is full of people who have difficulties. Life is very real. And it's interesting that Tanakh gives us a chapter over here where we have a chance of meeting a person who's not going to be our greatest hero and is not going to be our great villain. He's going to be a person who has experienced a difficult life, and it's going to be interesting to see how leaders deal with him. That's going to be our Mephibosheth, and somehow it's the Tanakh feels that this will call personal drama is going to be important to understanding who David HaMelech is as well. It's not just the ribbon-cutting ceremonies and the handshaking selfies, right? It's also about how you deal with the regular people. Now, Mephibosheth is not regular in some ways, but in many ways, he has the scars of life. So let's take a quick look at this parak. So the first thing we do is we are going to meet a person whose name is Tziva. Tziva is an ambiguous character in Tanakh. So let's try to get our sense of him. We're going to look in the text, the first two psukim, where we meet Tziva. Here he is. Vayomer David, David, Hachi yesh od asher nosar leveis Shaul, ve'ese imoy chesed ba'avur Yonatan. So again, in Perek Tess, in the psukim, in the text section. So the first pasuk tells us that David HaMelech is looking for, is there anybody remaining from the seed of Shaul? And I'll do kindness to them for the sake of Yonatan. And it happens to be that there was this servant whose name was Tziva. So Abdecha, he says, "Are you Tziva?" And he says, "I am. I'm your servant." So, first, a few things to take notice about over here is we've really moved from the national scope to the personal scope here. David HaMelech up till now has been waging wars, has been conquering Aram and Damesek and all the local regions, and now suddenly we're looking at his personal portfolio, his interests on the home front. Why now? Why is this of such a significance to us? So the Radak says it's always important. It's so hard when we learn the Mefarshim. A lot of the times the Mefarshim are explaining granular pieces of information on the Psukim, but there'll be times where they'll give us overviews of like sort of this is the vista of the next parak. This is what we just learned, and it's hard to sometimes find those excerpts in the Mefarshim because they're buried amongst also explaining how this word works and how that pasuk connects. So usually at the beginning of a parak is usually a good place. The first radak or malbim is usually a perspective giver. So this is an example of it. So in source 63. On the top of page 24, this is in Unit 3.7. Hachi o yesh od katam ha'im. He's asking, is there? V'chein hachi amarti. He goes on to explain this. Let's just actually skip down over here to Oh yeah, sorry. Towards the middle of the first line, v'tam zecher zeha inyan ha'hena. Why is this matter mentioned here? Ba'avur shenitzach hamilchamos v'haya b'menucha. Because now he's had military success on the borders. He's now can come home with a degree of serenity. V'seder ha'apikidim ha'mumunim sham sam el liboy shavuas Yonasan. So now he pays attention to his commitment to Yonasan. So once he has succeeded. If you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, safety and security, and then we can get to the next step. So we've got safety and security, the borders are secure, he can now start dealing with internal affairs. So that's the movement that the Radak sees over here. It makes a lot of sense. So what is this business with Yonatan? So like, what is he committed to? Why is Yonatan mentioned over here? So the deal is the following. This is just a source just over there. So here we go. If we reverse back, this is actually, by the way, we've been moving extremely fast, which is fantastic. We did this like about a year ago. So in Shmuel, towards the end of Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chav. So we did this where there was the famous, this is the Haftarah for Machar Chodesh, the Haftarah if Rosh Chodesh is on a Sunday. So we read this Shmuel Aleph Perek Chav, and there's this whole famous episode, David HaMelech, Yonatan, the arrows, the whole business. And just to paint the scene again for what's going on over here, this is when David HaMelech has now reason to fear for his life from Shaul, his father-in-law, and he doesn't know, he's not sure how, is it a function of Shaul's moods, Shaul's what seems to be depression, or is it a function of his actual ideological hate for David HaMelech? He doesn't know that. So he needs to find out, is he going to never return to his household essentially, or is this a passing cloud? And so the Yonatan comes out to meet with him, and Yonatan says he'll test the waters, and David HaMelech will be missing at the party, and Yonatan will see what's going on. That was their agreement. And it's at this point that David HaMelech says, look, if I'm found to be a condemned man, you can turn me in. David HaMelech says to Yonatan, your allegiances ultimately are to your father. You're the crown prince. You take the necessary steps. And his friendship. He believes he wants to honor Yonatan more than he seeks to look after himself. And Yonatan says no. Yonatan says I will be loyal to you, irrespective of what my father will say. A shocking moment. And Yonatan makes a demand, and he says, I'm going to tell you what's happening in the court to save your life, as long as, and this is his condition. So this is in source 64. This is the conversation that happens. It's a very powerful conversation. Vayomer Yonatan el David, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, ki echkor es avi ko'eis machar hashlishis. I will search out my father tomorrow at the same time. V'inei tov el David v'loy oz eshlach elecha v'golis yas oznechan. I will tell you what is happening. Ko yaseh Hashem Yonatan v'ko yasiv, ki etiv el avi v'el esara'o alecha v'golis yas oznecha. And Hashem should allow me to be able to tell you what is going on. I will send you a message and you'll go in peace if it's not good for you. And Hashem will be with you like he is with my father, which means, essentially, you'll be king. Right? Yonatan is giving over his role and his position. But you will do me a kindness at that time. I am taking the robe of kingship off my shoulders and giving it to you. But at that point in time, I will essentially be condemned man number one. Because now I will be the person who could have taken the throne. This is Banquo, right? So this is the next heir to the throne who we're seeing. And you won't cut off your kindness from my household. Ad olam, forever. V'loy ba'achreis Hashem es oivei David ish me'al p'nei adamo. And not when Hashem has cut off the enemies of David from the ground. V'yichros Yonatan im beis David u'bikesh Hashem yad oivei David. And he now makes a covenant that David won't harm him. This is so powerful. So Yonatan is essentially aligning his allegiances, aligning himself with David to the self-negation, of his position and his security. And he says, as long as, when the time comes, you're not going to take advantage of me. You're going to preserve me and my children forever. And they make this covenant. This is a very powerful moment in history. David respects Yonatan. Yonatan respects David. Ultimately, Yonatan never lives to this moment because Yonatan's killed in battle. But that's why David HaMelech is asking here, what's going on? Now that he's able to, if you look at the sequence of his promise, he says, when your enemies are cut off, you're not going to take revenge. His enemies have been cut off. David HaMelech has now vanquished his enemies. He's come back. So, step two, where's Yonatan? David HaMelech is true to his word. He said, is there any remaining descendant of Yonatan? Because it was an intergenerational covenant. It wasn't just with with Yonatan. We're seeing David HaMelech's words being coming out here. By the way, just for the sake of being clear, how many people were around to witness this covenant? It was Yonatan, David, and us, right? Right? Meaning to say, we, the omniscient reader, have the omniscient ear in to hear this covenant. But were the reporters there? Was this written up in the Washington Post? No. Which means at this point in time, David HaMelech, by all political, you know, we'll call it precedent and successes, could easily ignore this conversation. Right. At this point in time, right? I mean, this should not be of such consequence to David HaMelech. He's got better things to eat. He's got, you know, it's a new emerging nation. He's just now unified two warring factions. He is now the first king of Israel. He's got busy things to do, right? But it's interesting that we see that David HaMelech is committed to his word. And even though even a private conversation, this is where he stands. So we see the mettle of leadership. Yeah, that's number one, very powerful thing. And so he seeks to find this out. And his only lead, he doesn't know. He doesn't really know if there's anybody. His only lead is this person called Tziva. What do we know about Tziva from the Psukim at this point? What information are we given? He's a servant to Shaul. Right, now Shaul's no longer here, but the Radak tells us an interesting thing. What was that? Oh, yeah, we'll get that in a second. So we'll get that in a second to Mephibosheth. But Tziva, before we get to Mephibosheth, here we have Tziva. So who is this Tziva individual? So the Radak tells us, Ulbeis Shaul Eved. Eved Kanani Haya, he was a non-Jewish servant. Okay, so it's interesting. There were two different categories of slaves in those days. So there was a non-Jewish slave. That would be, in a certain sense, in the way it worked in the law of all cultures at that time, was that there were certain people who had certain rights, but they were also of the considered owned possessions. So this would be what's called an Eved Kanani. And the halacha is, v'yalishol l'beis acharav k'mo shekasu v'isnachaltem oisam livneichem acharechem. Which means that essentially their ownership is transferred intergenerationally. So even when you're reading, you know, 1800s literature here in America, same thing, right? So it's this is the family slave, and the family of slaves will go in the family of owners, which means what David HaMelech is doing. So tells the Radak is telling us is David HaMelech is trying to find a lead, because if you can look at the family slave, then you could find the family, because he is obviously subject to the family still, if there is a family. So that's the reason why he's going in this particular direction. Slaves are worth a lot of money. Right? Nobody's going to just let them go, be sold down the river. So that's David HaMelech's assessment. Does Tanakh at this point in time give us a judgment on Tziva? Is it judging us? It's not giving a judgment of character right now, right? Just telling us who he is. He seems very what's the word? Obsequious at this point. Avdecha, I'm your servant. That's all he says. Now, so let's see the conversation. So moving forward in Psukim, the next little section of Psukim are from Gimel 2. Vav. Here we go. Vayomer haMelech haEfes od ish v'leves Shaul ve'esde imoy chesed elokim. Is there anybody else here who I'll do the kindness of Hashem to him? Vayomer Tziva al haMelech od ben Yonatan nechei raglaim. There is a handicapped son of Yonatan. Vayomer haMelech, eifo hu, where is he? Vayomer Tziva haMelech, hinehu beis machir Amiel beloy davar. He's in, you know, beis machir in Amiel in a place called Loy Davar. Vayishlach haMelech David vayikachehu mi beis machir ben Amiel mi Loy Davar. So he goes and sends for him. Vayavoy mifiboshes ben Yonatan ben Shaul el David. Vayipo apono vayishtachu. He falls upon his face and bows down. Vayomer David mifiboshes. Vayomer hinei avdecha. He says mifiboshes, and he says I'm your servant. So obviously, by the way, if you were Mephibosheth at this point, emotion is
fear.
I mean, like, yeah, right. The kings don't like heirs of the opposing family. They only create problems. So that's why, generally speaking, when you see a good turnover in monarchy, what's the first thing they do? They massacre everybody else, not the previous family. Just, you know. So obviously he has rights to be scared now. But obviously that's not what David HaMelech has in mind. Just an interesting point over here. A few things to notice. So why is he handicapped? So we need to put together a few other pieces of Tanakh to appreciate this. So if we reverse to Perek Dalad, we're told about this in the sources over here. In Psalm 66, we know that he's a product of a terrible era. He's a product of a moment of disaster. We're told in Shmuel Beis Perek Dalad Pasuk Dalad, Uli Yonatan ben Shaul ben Nerchei Raglaim. He had a son who was handicapped. Ben Chamesh Shanim Haya Bevoi Shmuas Shaul V'Yonatan Bim Yisrael. So when his father died in battle in the Valley of Yisrael, that's when the tidings from the war came back. He was 5 years old. and his nurse, the person who's the childcare person was carried him. And she ran. She's obviously terrified of what the loss in battle would mean, and she tripped and he was crippled for life from this experience. So that's the story. It reminds us. We're going back in Tanakh. Reminds us of another individual's name was Ichabod, right? Yeah. Ichabod was sort of the child born to the child to Pinchas ben Eli, who he was born upon the tidings of the destruction of the Mishkan and the death of his father. His mother went into premature labor and had him. And she died in childbirth. A terrible story. And this child was called Ichavod, which means lack of honor, the destroying of honor. And it's interesting that this is almost like Mephibosheth is kind of like that child, where the rest of his life experience is framed by this moment of destruction, which is a sad moment. And one wonders, when one looks at Mephibosheth, is has he ever been able to overcome that? You know, so he had this moment of terrible, you know, he was maimed for life, but is he able to rise out of that? And we're gonna have to question if he ever is. He seems to be a very passive character, as we will see in Tanakh. Something interesting to note over here is that is Tziva in fact serving his master's grandson from these pesukim? It doesn't sound like Tziva's all right. You know, he doesn't seem to be too bothered about the fact that there is this Mephibosheth. In fact, he's like, oh yeah, you know, I heard that he's down the road. What do you mean you heard he's down the road? You know, you are the property of Shaul. If Shaul dies, that means you go to Yonatan. If Yonatan dies, that means you go to Mephibosheth. So you should be washing his shoes right now. Like, what do you I heard. Right, so you notice there's something we are here. Either this says something about Mephibosheth or it says something about Tziva. Oh, it says something about both. It could mean that Mephibosheth is not asserting his rights, or it could mean that Tziva is fully asserting his, or a little bit of the two. Just to appreciate this, that this is not the relationship is not as Rodal Ramelach would have expected it. So here's what we're going to see. So let's take it one step further. So David HaMelech now says from Pasuk Zion to Yud Gimel. And this really takes us to the end of this area where David Melech sets up his relationship with Mephibosheth. So here we go. Let's just focus on the pesukim for a moment. David al Tira, he says, "Don't fear," because obviously he's feeling scared. "Ki asa e'ese imcha chesed, I will do with you kindness ba'avur Yonatan avicha, because of Yonatan your father. Va'ashivoyesi lecha es kol sedei Shaul avicha, I'm going to return all the real estate that your father owned. And you're going to have bread on my table always. Food for the rest of your life is going to be taken care of." Not a small thing. Not a small thing, right? Think about adding up the grocery bills on a monthly. Think about the monthly budget for one's family. Think about that with having an extra individual, you know, and then compound that monthly, and compound that annually, and compound that per decade. You know, that's a big thing. Okay. You turn to a dead dog like me. That's an expression of humility. Dead dogs are the lowest of the rung of metaphors in society, and dead dogs are lower than them. So what he's saying is I'm not. And by the way, when I get one step lower, is the flea on the dead dog, right? So I believe that's used by Naval, right? So the hierarchy of humble descriptions. So he says, look, you're turning to me. Vayikra hamelech el tziva na'ar sha'ul vayomer elav. So David now turns to Tziva, who's in the room, and he says to him, na'ar, by the way, na'ar doesn't mean a lad. It means it's an expression of sort of underling, right? So he says to him, kol asher hayal sha'ul l'chol beisod nasati l'ven adonecha. Sorry, I know you've been enjoying the estate and everything, but actually it belongs to him. Right, you will now till the land, you and your children and your servants. You'll bring the the produce of the land to your master. And he will be sustained by me. He had 15 sons of his own and 20 servants. Tziva was on the upper echelons of slave society. He was living it all right, if you know what I'm saying. So he got quite used to this new position, right? There's, you know, first of all, you don't just become the king's servant, you know. There's a process, right? There's many resumes. And so he, you know, he was the king's servant, and he had servants of himself. So, you know, he had a corner office where he would, you know, he would make sure that all the valets and all the different people would be doing their things. And so when the king dies, he was all right. He had an estate to manage, right? So David Melech says, sorry. We're going to try, the rightful owner actually is Mephibosheth, and he's going to be in charge, he's going to be eating by me, but you're going to be answering to him. So the artificial relationship has been reinstituted. Of course, naturally. Everything you say, my liege, will be of you. I'm at your service. And Mephibosheth will eat on my table like one of the sons of the king. What's he really saying there? What do you think he's saying? We have to debate. There's a debate. Whose voice is this? Is David HaMelech reasserting that?
No.
Or was it Tziva? What's Tziva really saying? Is, I have the power. Right? It's my table. It's my table. I have been setting this table up till now. My servants have been setting the table for me. Right? So what's Mephibosheth's Tziva really saying is, I control this estate. Right, he's asserting his power. And so Mephibosheth had his own son, whose name was Micha, and Tziva and his servants were to Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth says, "Kel shulchan ha-melech tamid, hu ochel v'hu pisach shtei raglav." So he would stay in Yerushalayim. He was on the table of the king, and he was handicapped in both of his feet because of the accident that occurred. Now, so just you see over here, there seems to be a very surreptitious jockeying for power. Tziva clearly doesn't seem very comfortable with this renewed relationship with, and after all, this is just Mephibosheth. It's not exactly the king, right? So you see there seems to be a little bit of disgruntledness over here in the subtext, which is fascinating. We also just see something which is, you know, we'll see if this comes to expression. Mephibosheth doesn't really assert himself here. Mephibosheth is going to spend time at David Melech's table. And that is quite a remarkable thing for the king to have the prior king's son, or grandson in this case, sitting on the table, at his table for the rest of his life. That says a large amount about David Melech. David Melech could have found an institution for him, right? He could have said, you know, we have fine institutions in Jerusalem, and you know, we'll set you up somewhere, right? David Melech doesn't just do what's on the checklist. He does it. He makes sure that Yonatan's children are taken care of on his own table. That's just a remarkable indication of the character of David HaMelech. There's a debate in the Mephoreshim over here, like, you know, by what right did he have to redistribute the land of Shaul HaMelech? And there's a whole discussion here in the Mephoreshim. The Radak talks about this. You know, generally speaking, the king does have certain rights to take land. So, for instance, if the army needs to get from point A to point B, the king can say, "Sorry, folks, I know it's your land, but we're going here, right?" So, there's eminent domain, but there's a whole discussion over here as to this isn't eminent domain in the sense the king can't just walk in anywhere and ask for land. You know, we're going to see later on with Achav. When he gets to Melachim, Achav has to pull this whole game where false witnesses kill Navot in order to take the vineyard. It's not so simple. So there's a whole discussion here. How did he redistribute the property? And among the answers are, well, Tziva didn't really own the property in the first place, right? Meaning it wasn't Tziva's to begin with. It already belonged to Shaul. And so he's simply just readjusting where he's going back to the reassessment of the property in the county, right? So that's what the real owner is going to be attributed over here. Okay, there we go. So this is the section. Now, the truth is the story hasn't ended really, and so rather than doing it piecemeal, let's just take a few minutes to actually see the end of the story. So we leave a rewarded Mephibosheth, a somewhat disgruntled Tziva, and a heroic David. Right, the three characters of our Perek. But, you know, whenever opportunity emerges, we're going to see that the real nature of people comes out. So here we go. We're going to fast forward right now to Perek Tezayin, the 16th chapter of Yishmol. And here we have it. David Melech is in a vulnerable spot right now. His own son, Avshalom, has taken hold of Yerushalayim. David HaMelech, as opposed to seeking direct conflict, is now leaving Jerusalem. We're going to get the Mes Hashem in a few weeks' time. And he's leaving Yerushalayim as a refugee. And it's at this time that allegiances are very important. Who supports who, who's going to support who thinks who's going to win the war, and whose side you want to be on. Not so simple. If you're not a value-driven person, it's very hard to make these kind of decisions. If you believe in values, then you know who you're going to support. But if you basically believe in self-promotion, then you have to think about who's going to win, right? So there's a number of those kind of people that we meet, and one of them is Tziva, right? So remember that Tziva is a servant to the house of Shaul, which is from the tribe of Binyamin, right? So, you know, when David HaMelech is vulnerable, where's this going to go? Here we go. So, source 70. This is the psukim in the beginning of the parak. For David Ovar Ma'at Me'arosh, V'neit Tzivo Nar Mefiboshes Likrosoi, V'tzemed Hamorim Chavushim V'aleihem Mosayim Lechem U'mea Tzimukim U'mea Kayetz V'nevel Yayin. And out comes Tziva as David HaMelech is fleeing with all this pomp and circumstance, and he has bread, and he has wine, and he has grapes. What a thoughtful fellow, right? And he's obviously a very rich individual, this Tziva. And he brings it all out. V'yom ha-melech al-tziva. Ma'elelach, what is this? V'yom ha-tziva. Ha-chamorim leves ha-melech lirkov. Ulvei ha-lechem va-kayitz lechol. Ha-na'arim va-yayin lishtois ha-yo'ef mi-ba-midbar. You're going to be traveling a long time. He has provisions for the way. What a thoughtful fellow. Clearly Tziva, as a betting man, believes that David HaMelech is going to win this, right? So he has now put his hat into this ring because he thinks David HaMelech is going to come back. And of course, you're going to be rewarded. So where's your master's son, which means referring to Mephibosheth. He stayed in Jerusalem because he thought this is his opportunity to regain his malchus. I told you. Right, I told you he was plotting. Right, that's what the Tziva seems to be saying. So the king says, I'm reappropriating all the estate of Shaul to you, Tziva, my loyal servant. And he walks backwards very touched. Which was, by the way, you can see, we are always given narratives, and we have to always think to ourselves how truthful is the narrative or the narrator, or how it is framed in their voice. So at this point in time, you know, we hear his story. Do we know it's true? We don't know. We don't know what Mephibosheth says. We don't know what Mephibosheth's mind. We hear the narrative of Tziva, and Tziva is presenting it as this is a disgruntled servant looking for a moment to take advantage of it, or really Mephibosheth was. But we don't hear so much from Mephibosheth. He's a very passive character. So what happens afterwards? We fast forward three prokem. We just try to put all the pieces here together in the story. So David HaMelech, after a terrible battle ensues, and Avshalom is, don't want to spoil it, but Avshalom is killed, and David HaMelech is now returning to Yerushalayim triumphantly. So now everybody who was bad to David at the moment of vulnerability has to feel very scared, and all those people who were good to David HaMelech feel very good with themselves, and they all come to visit David because now David HaMelech is going to be reinstated. So allegiances are tested again in source 71. This is Shmuel Bey's Perek Yod Tes Pasuk Kaveh. Ulam if Mephibosheth ben Shaul yarad likras haMelech v'loy osa raglo v'loy osa sefama. He hadn't really dressed up. He didn't trim his beard. Ves begodav loy kibes. He has not laundered his clothing. Lamina yom leches haMelech ada yom hashebov b'shalom. For all those weeks and perhaps months, the David HaMelech was out, didn't take care of himself. He's clearly looking ragged. He's looking disheveled. Vayehi kivo Yerushalayim likras haMelech. Vayemar haMelech lama lo yehalachta imi Mephibosheth. So when David HaMelech reaches Yerushalayim, by the way, why didn't he come out to reach? Why didn't Mephibosheth come to meet him at the Jordan when he's crossing? Because he didn't have anyone to help him, right? So David's first question is where were you? Why didn't you come? You saw I was vulnerable. Why weren't you there? Remember, in David HaMelech's mind, he's already heard the story. Mephibosheth doesn't know what was said about him necessarily, if it's not true. Right, so he doesn't know even to defend himself. Vayomar, Adonai HaMelech, Abdi Rimoni, my slave tricked me. Who's my slave? Tziva, right? Ki Amar Avdecha, Ech B'sho Li HaChamor V'erkav Oleo V'eilech El HaMelech Kipseach Avdecha. He says, I'm going to get the horse ready. I'm going to get everything ready. You just wait here, Mephibosheth. I'll be back in a few moments, and we'll get you up on the steed. Vayragel Avdecha El Adonai HaMelech. Adonai HaMelech Kamalach Elokim V'aseh Ato Beinecha. And he left me here. But you know that I'm a good person. You know I wouldn't do something like that. You're like an angel. Look what you've done for me up till now. You should have killed everybody in my family, but you allowed me to live. Look what you do. What else could I say? You're so good. You're so good to me. How could I backstab you after what you've done for me? Right? It just doesn't. The moral ring of truth doesn't make sense. How corrupt would I have to be to backstab you, David? Just stop speaking. Just stop. You and Tziva, you'll split the estate now. Just take the estate. I don't care. I'm so happy you're alive. I don't need the money. Why is David HaMelech saying split the estate? What's going on in David HaMelech's mind?
Doesn't know
who to believe. Right, so it's, you know, here I have the slave who says he's waiting for me to fall. Then I have him saying the slave tricked me. I don't know what's going on with these folks. I really don't know who's loyal or not. I don't want to have anything to do with them. Either one. You forget it, split the field, keep it aside. And what does Mephibosheth do? He comes through true. Mephibosheth says, it wasn't about the money. I didn't need the money. I want you. Right, so Mephibosheth comes through as a ring of truth. David HaMelech doesn't know who to trust. Trust is such a hard thing to come by, and especially when you live a life of David HaMelech. People backstab David HaMelech all the way through. David HaMelech had a torturous life. So David HaMelech just says, he tunes him out, essentially. What is interesting is that Chazal actually critiqued David HaMelech for this. Back in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof, when David HaMelech was making his covenant with Yonatan, this is what Rashi says. We learned this then, but it's so appropriate now. And here's what he says in the last source today, and that is Tachalku es Asadeh. He says, so separate the field. I apologize. This is Rashi here. It relates back to that. He says, split up the field. Hasadeh kolel lekol anachla. That means to say that, you know, whatever, wherever, you know, he had, you know, a vacation house down in Eilat, wherever it was, it's all, you know, halfway with Tziva. He says, with Divrei Rabbo Seinuzal, Rashi quotes Chazal. He quotes the sages of the Mishnah. Kishe Omar David atov etziva techalku asadeh yotzos baskol v'omar omra yoravam v'rochavam yechalku esamalchus. Whew. Wow, that's heavy. You think it's just on a whim you can split up Mephibosheth's land? Well, your land, which is what? Your national territory, which is Israel, will be divided between Rochavam and Yoravam in two generations. The areas are very harsh, right? Why? Because he listened to Tziva. Because he listened to that nefarious slave. And he didn't listen to the rationale of Mephibosheth. When he silenced him. And the Pesukim go out of their way to describe that he was disheveled, meaning to say, he wasn't living the high life. He was abandoned, right? I mean, to say David HaMelech should have paid more attention to just the very looks of Mephibosheth to understand what had really happened. But David HaMelech wasn't interested. And because he didn't have the empathy, to listen to him, but also the empathy which he ultimately committed to. He committed to Yonatan, I'm going to look after your children, but it didn't go that far. So for that, there was a critique on David. Now, just to clarify here, this is not causation necessarily, right? I mean, to say it's not because of this one incident that the whole of England, you know, the whole of the Union split, and you know, the Confederacy and the whole business. It wasn't because of that. There was numerous factors, but one of the factors which is expressed over here is not so much David HaMelech's decision, but rather distrust between brothers. That's what it comes down to. You know, Rehoboam, you think you're in charge, you're going to raise taxes. Well, I've got a better economic system, right? And so your own comes in. Right? Everybody, it all comes down to basic distrust between different parts of the family. That's how families split. That's how kingdoms split. That's how empires fall. All the way through. Marcus Aurelius, the fall of the Roman Empire, right? It's all distrust in family. It all comes down to the same thing. What Rashi's identifying over here is the Achilles heel we've always had in history, and that's through this conversation. So you just a few interesting things you see here for just a moment is over here is that the Tanakh goes out of its way to talk about the more ordinary characters. First of all, he's not a hero by any standards. He's almost an anti David HaMelech. David HaMelech was this powerful, decisive, you know, go forward person. Mephibosheth was a very passive character. But David HaMelech treated him with a great amount of respect until the rumors started mixing in the pot. And David HaMelech's character is ultimately judged based on how he treats the ordinary folk. Not just the wars he won, not just the successes and the expansion and the will to build the base of English. Part of it is this aspect of his character, which is a remarkable insight into the way that we learn values, not just success. Anyways, yes.
So I have two comments. One is that at this point, David's speech has been beaten down. He's just come back from
the war. Yeah, you're right. We should give him a little more slack.
And he's not. Also, my other point is that it's always over money.
Right. So, so that exactly that point should show David HaMelech that the truth of Mephibosheth. Because Mephibosheth made it very clear that it wasn't about the money. Just think about this. If you were offered a certain amount of property and you basically forfeit it, you would say, you know, just forget it. You'd forget the apartment in Miami. Forget the... Right, I just want it for our relationship. You ever met anybody who hasn't done that before? I'm saying anybody ever just, you know, throws over the title because they want a relationship? That's a big commitment, right? So here you see, this is what he should have noticed. But you're right, David HaMelech is at the same time. I mean, David HaMelech just lost his son. And he did everything to say that they shouldn't hurt his son. And so David HaMelech is entitled, so to speak, to be at this point.
How he was with Jonathan? Because we learned about the love.
Rumors.
Yeah, but what changed in David HaMelech?
Rumors. It's very hard to disassociate your first impression of a situation. David HaMelech has a situation. Situation is Mephibosheth is not present. What does that mean? So he's given a perspective. He's given a narrative of that situation. It's very hard to disengage from that narrative. It's very hard to retrust a person you've lost trust in, which is the danger that we all fall into whenever we engage in any disputes. We will always stick to our first impression, and it takes a whole lot of effort to dislodge us from our inertia, and that's what David HaMelech is stuck in. It's not David HaMelech. This is us. We're all in the same situation. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Why does it mention and Pastor Gimel again that he's lame? We know he's lame.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Why is that?
I'm not sure. That's a very good question.
It's repeated. Like,
right. It seems to be emphasizing his the docile nature, meaning to say, like, he's not a threat. He's not a danger. He's just going to be there. He's just going to be an add-on to the household.
So. And then my other question.
Yeah.
In the, you know, Parakeet and Tedvav, when they say that Ziva came to him, are they sure that Ziva came to do that and give that to David, or did he, like, sort of meet him on the road as he was on his way to Avshalom to give him all that stuff?
Oh, no, it's not clear, but it sounds like he was going with it. And by the way, Ziva was a very smart politician, because just if you remember, David HaMelech, the one thing that David HaMelech does not tolerate, is that when you're going into battle and you need an ally to give you food to your troops and you deny it. Where do we see that? Where you say, by the novel episode in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof Hei, where David HaMelech asks for provisions, Naval closes his door, and David HaMelech goes and almost kills Naval. Right? So Tziva has learned. You know, he's learned the king's history and said, how do you find favor is at the times of vulnerability, feed him. Right? So he's using exactly that. So he's a very, very cunning fellow, and he's waiting for this opportunity, and he's taking full advantage of it. Terrible. Terrible. But that's what you see up here. Regular human beings, this is how people operate. And David Melech is unfortunately caught in the middle of this. Anyways, this leads us to the last parak of this section, which is parak Yod Mitzvah Shem. Yes, Alicia. Not clear. I've not seen anything specific. Other than that, he's separate from Tziva, which seems that, you know, there was no. He was quite comfortable living in the, you know, Lodavar is not Shaul's property. Put it that way. So he's not in the family apartment.
Why wouldn't he go and take that land? It's his.
He should have, but that's an indication of Mephibosheth's passivity. He's a dependent person who doesn't assert himself, and even when he's given back the servant, he can't really fully assert himself over the servant who just looks for his opportunity.
How come David HaMelech wasn't able to see that Ziba had already betrayed
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good question. You're right. Sometimes you can't always fight all everybody's fights. You know, you try to fix things, put in structures and systems, but can't always get what's right. Sometimes it just has to be manageable, you know? Awesome, yeah.
But the bottom line is that Zava did take care of Mishivosa.
He did.
Whether or not he made him a rich man or not, he took care of him, and mm-hmm. that was the basic promise.
And that was the promise. You're right.
So even though he got confused, because that was my first thought was,
you're right.
Well, why didn't he just realize that he had to take care of him? But the bottom line is he did take care of him. Just because he didn't give him riches and glory doesn't mean that he didn't take care of him.
Yeah, it sounds like there's been a change of attitude as well. You're right. But you're right. Technically speaking, you know, the food will still be, at, you know, over there. You know, but it sounds like the relationship has ended, unfortunately.
How do we know that it's a direct consequence of the splitting of the...
So again, Chazal have either it's a tradition or an assumption they're making. So I'm assuming it's a tradition. But they're saying that the way that David HaMelech says to Chalko es Sadeh is going to ultimately come back to haunt him. That the Sadeh is the metaphor for all of Israel. And I'm just saying psychologically, kingdoms split because of the same problems. That's what Chazal seem to be indicating. You accept rumors, you don't trust brothers. That's when these kind of things happen, and we witness it again and again in history until we forget about it and we do it again to ourselves. So, anyways, food for thought. Anyways, have a wonderful